people from the three corners. Now, the honorable members have got more expensive watches than myself. It's past the hour of two, and there are only two members of parliament here attached to the portfolio committee. The minister is accompanied by a delegation of 18 people in this room. So, I'll delay proceedings by 5 more minutes or so. In the meantime, do get yourself whatever is available at the back of the room. There is an official from the Auditor General's office. She might accuse one of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Medipal. I hope it's not fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So people will have to be force fed. So please, whilst we wait for 5 more minutes, then I'm starting it.
Thank you.
Yet again, can somebody close their talk?
before Maitreya ran away, but she's back now. And in my 2015 budget vote, I informed the parliament that the patient has been discharged, but was still subject to strict medical and therapeutic regime. And that's where I'm standing today. The annual report for 2014-15 reflects amendments to my 2014 policy statements and budget vote statements, as well as the progress in the implementation of our 7-year turnaround plan. The turnaround plan to rebuild public works. Now, in the third year of the turnaround plan, we're able to report the following significant progress in achieving the goals of the stabilization phases or phase of the turnaround strategy. What we dubbed then the clean audit project has led to continuous improvement in the audit outcomes. The main vote improved from a disclaimer to a qualified audit opinion in 2012-13 and an unqualified audit opinion in 2013-14. This has been maintained for 2014-15 financial year. The property management trade entity improved from a disclaimer in 2012-13 to a qualified audit opinion in 2013-14, with significantly less areas as the basis for qualification. And the momentum has continued as a result, or has continued as an audit outcome for 2014-15. And it has been a qualification on two matters only. There's still a lot of work which must be done. Public Works has generated an immovable asset register which incorporates the state's properties under its custodianship. Buildings have been physically verified and we have begun to assign fair values to these assets. Applying the municipality values to 66% of the asset had increased and has disclosed the value from 49 million in 2012-13 to 78.1 billion in 2014-15. The disclosed value of the immovable asset will increase significantly as the register is finalized, that reflecting in the national balance sheet more appropriately. So the existence of a reliable immovable asset register is immensely valuable and will enhance public works ability to leverage this huge portfolio for socio-economic development, economic empowerment, support for small business and job creation, as well as to generate revenue to maintain the state assets. The audit of the receipts in the previous year provided a very important platform for the identification of irregular leases, to strengthen controls and to improve the management of the leases. During 2014-15 financial year, the department worked with the National Treasurer both to address the immediate challenge of expired leases and to develop a specific supply chain management solution for the property environment. So the current practice is 10%. A robust indication of the path we have traversed and the winning ways we are adopting. Given then what I've just stated, as we move forward to improving the way the Department of Public Works functions, our report reflects on the five priority areas which are summarized as the creation of the 6 million EPW to work opportunities, the operationalization of the PMTE, operationalization of the new government risk and compliance branch, major policy review coming into the public works act, and the transformation of the built environment. But I must indicate that these priorities are linked to the 9 outcomes of the MTSF. And we think that it's important that we have to carefully analyze what has changed since this time last year, and therefore we have to do so differently now. one of the things which I think is important, I suggest we have to carefully look at the areas or the following areas. The new SONA priorities and commitments and the implications for where public works is expected to be. Developments in the business environment in which public works operates, particularly the construction and the property sectors. The MTSF outcomes, that's the fundamental implication of the decision to separate also PMDE from the department, which remains under the oversight of the department. Therefore, it's important that the person, as I hand over to Paul, once we're looking at these reports, we'll be aware of the changing environment, the policy priorities for the department, and the policy priorities for the property management trade entity. And I can definitely say, as a department, we have moved from the bleeding, which we call the stabilization phase. We've entered the second stage now, or the second phase, which we call the efficiency enhancement. I'll therefore hand over to Paul, who will introduce his team and then deals with the report. Andres Roth.
Thank you, Ms. Vatan. Good day, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I am and colleagues. I am accompanied today by a number of DDGs and a few chief directors who will be supporting the process today. My name is Paul Sirota. I'm the head of PMTE. I am accompanied by the chief financial officer, Mr. Cox Mukhoro, the DDG of governance, risk and compliance, Mr. Imtiaz Faisal. The DG for EPWP, Mr. Bentley Henderson. The DG for Facility Management, Mr. Guy Governor. The DG for Special Projects, Ms. Lydia. The DG for Real Estate Information and Registry Services, Ms. Mantiman. The DG in the Office of the Director General, Mr. Samuel Sobakale. The DG Project Management, Mr. Ngozi Blagas, the acting DDG for Property and Construction Policy, Ms. Mandisa Jelalin, the DDG Corporate Services, Mr. Clive Lucheza, Chief Director Monitoring and Evaluation, Mr. Luazi Mkangu, the Chief Director DPW Finance, Mr. Aaron Masibuko, the Chief Director PMC Finance, Mr. Carlos Capello, the Director Investment Analysis, Mr. Vinod Petesi, the Director NNE, Mr. Gamut Sundembu, and the Director NNE, Mr. Kanyani Sikala. I will, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, get into the detail of the presentation. The first slide really gives some sort of a roadmap in terms of the structure of the contents of the presentation. Then we will start with just reflecting on the mandate of the department, the ministerial priorities. We will then give some historical perspective. I believe Minister touched on a few aspects of that. Our response to some of the issues raised in terms of the strategic realignment. We will then share with the committee the high-level performance highlights. Then we will get into the program performance, and we will then finish off with the financial information. In terms of our reflection, as far as the mandate goes, the constitutional mandate is provided for in Schedule 4, Part 8 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, the functional areas of concurrent, national, and provincial legislative competence. The legislative mandate is primarily governed by the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, GMA. The department regulates the construction industry and built environment through the Construction Industry Development Board Act, Act 38 of 2000, and the six professional council acts that regulate the six built environment professional professions, and through the Council for the Built Environment Act number 43 of 2000. With respect to the policy mandate, the two public works white papers and the public works towards 21st century 1997 and creating an enabling environment for reconstruction growth and development in the construction industry of 1999. Construction sector transformation charter of 2006, the property sector transformation charter of 2006, the property sector transformation charter 2007, the DPW broad-based black economic empowerment strategy of 2006, the property management strategy on BBBE, job creation, poverty elevation 2007, and the green building framework of 2011. The mission aligns to the mandate of the department is to provide quality accommodation and related services to our clients, to efficiently and effectively manage the immovable assets in our custodianship, and to actively contribute to the national goals of job creation, poverty alleviation through the expanded public works program, to provide expert built environment advice to our stakeholders, and to provide strategic leadership to the South African construction and property industry. With respect to the ministerial priorities, the five would be the creation of 6 million work opportunities over a period of 5 years for poor unemployed people through labor intensive delivery of public services and infrastructure. The operationalization of the PMTE and the transformation of the core property business components of the department. The establishment of the GRC branch to drive anti-corruption and to spearhead the second phase of the turnaround strategy. In consultation with all stakeholders, particularly the wider public works sector, a policy review must culminate in public works action. In partnership with the department and the Charter Council, the relevant stakeholders, a renewed and sustained program of action to transform the built environment must be embarked upon. The historical perspective, here we start with a reflection on the diagnostic reports of the unit, which is now called GTEC. It was released in January 2012, which reveals the following areas that needed to be addressed within the department. You'll remember chairperson, the allegations of fraud and corruption, national treasury approval for PMTE, all the conditions had been implemented. The lack of an adequate service delivery model to user departments due to slow delivery of accommodation and poorly maintained accommodation. Incomplete movable asset register, a lack of stability in leadership positions, and the negative audit outcomes. Now, in response to this, the strategic alignment sought to address the identified weaknesses in the department as follows. A 7-year turnaround plan was developed with the guidance of the Technical Assistance Unit's diagnostic report. A strategy to operationalize the PMTE separated the regulatory function of the department from the implementation functions of the property management training entity was based on the value proposition of the PMTE to focus on improving service delivery, anti-corruption and anti-maladministration drive, best practice in the provision of accommodation and the management of the immovable asset life cycle, which is really guided at the core by GM, an appropriate organizational structure for the PMT to ensure that professionals are affected and retained, and to develop proper accrual-based accounts for the PMT. The next slide is quite busy, but I'll summarize it as follows. I mean, really what it does is it takes one through the journey that I've just explained with respect to the historical perspective of the strategic alignment, and it seeks to unpack the mandate, and it then takes you through a journey of how the activities of the department and now the PMT had to be reorganized in order to properly align with the mandate and the legislation. And I just wanted to point out that at the center of it, as the last comment I made, is the thrust towards the professionalization of the discipline within the new revised model of delivery. The ultimate outcome is really a new DPW which focuses on the policy and regulation, the main drivers being transformation and growth. And on the side of the PMTE, revised model of DUR, which then takes the organization of the activities in line with the guidance of the Act. And you have the core business at the center being real estate investments, where the activities of planning, acquisition, and disposal. You have the real estate management, which is really the operation of the asset through the life cycle, and facilities management as well, which is to maintain. Now, the key support functions that are there, construction management on rights and the real estate registry, which in summary, is the model of delivery, which is a lot more focused, and as you can see, is a lot closer aligned to what the Act requires us to do, the Act in GMs. Looking at the movement of the whole outcomes over a period ranging from the year 2011-2012 to the latest 2014-2015, I think the reality is an improvement in audit outcomes in line with the spirit of improving government and administration within both the department and the PMCE. The blue line reflects the migration of the department from a disclaimer in 2011-2012 to a qualified opinion and to an unqualified opinion with methods raised in 2013-2014, and in 2014-15 the opinion has not changed in terms of the unqualified opinion, but the other matters raised have been reduced and I think you will see the detail in slide 27. We continue to aspire to attain the lean audit for the department and for the PMC. And you know, the focus area as far as the remaining issues within the other matters of the unqualified opinion that needed to really be dealt with in terms of our audit action plan relates mainly to the EPWP. We have engaged on some system enhancement, some awareness and support to the implementing agents, mainly the municipalities, in order to ensure that the portfolio of evidence and so forth continues to be refined and improved to support the numbers that we report as far as EPWP is concerned, being one of the key issues. With respect to the DMTE, it's the red line, from 2011-12 to 2012-13, the audit opinion remained unchanged at the disclaimer. The big improvement from disclaimer to a qualified opinion was in the 2013-2014 year, and in 2014-2015, although we remained with some qualification, the issues raised by the auditors were significantly reduced, and you will see in slide 47 the detail of that. Again, our audit action plan and all the other enhancements that we are doing, particularly in the operating environment with the introduction of the remainder of the modules on our main operating enterprise ERP system, Archivas, and also a focused audit action plan around issues that still remain in terms of an audit document should help us to continue in an upward trajectory as far as the improvement of the audit outcomes. Perhaps the question that one could ask as far as the 2014-15, I guess 2015-16 audit outcome, is concerned, or the only issues that one is particularly focused on with respect to the audit action plan is the issue of all the major issues that were subject to exclusions or exemptions in terms of the transitional arrangement insofar as the first time adoption of GREP were content, and of a particular example being the issue of the immovable assets register being complete by the end of March 2016. We do report on the details further on in the presentation. With respect to the performance highlights, I think we have tried to just summarize in a nutshell some of the key areas of performance highlights. During the period under review, the compilation of a substantially complete immovable asset register towards the March 2016 target, which I must add has assisted us a great deal in the operating environment in terms of particularly knowing our assets, knowing the value thereof, and of course being able to link it to the service offerings to the user departments who are our clients. We believe that we have reached a point where we have a credible user database with the substantiating documentation that resulted in no material findings on issues within the current year under review. You would reflect that there is an issue that had bothered us in the past. The completion of construction projects, we continue to improve within minimal variation on completion. With respect to the operationalization of the PMTE, we have achieved a critical milestone with the transfer functions from the main board to the PMTE, and that process is an ongoing process of transformation. And I would like to also report that we have got quite a robust change management program that is moving to support the organization in the migration. The successful accounting treatment of the complex transactions associated with the transfer functions was a reality and was the major focus of the work of finance during the period under review. And you will notice that this area was also the subject of the audit process, and one looks at the financial statement, there are specific notes that deal with this matter which have been audited. Skills development and capacity building to complement the skills requirements continues to be a major focus area of the department and the PMTE. The continuous enhancement of the service delivery model, or the development of a service delivery, my apologies, we have developed a service delivery model for GPW and the PMTE, and we continue to enhance it as we engage with our project reviews on an ongoing basis as part of the operationalization of the PMT. We have strengthened the coordination and oversight of the public works sector to effective intergovernmental engagement. For example, an effective intergovernmental relations unit as a MIMEC process, which is regular and robust in terms of assisting with the effect of the concurrent mandates. The effective transition from phase 2 to phase 3 and the creation of 1.1 million work opportunities in 2014-15, which reflected an overperformance against the target of just over a million work opportunities. When we get into the program performance, I will start with program one, and in the annual report, it will be pages 88 to 99. The purpose of program one administration is to provide strategic leadership and support the overall management of the department. The sub-programs being ESG management, corporate services, and office accommodation. In terms of some of the areas to point out with respect to performance, 22 of the 27 internal audit reports were completed, all investigations initiated within 30 days that that they were reported, the 9 allegations were reported. A strategic risk register was developed in accordance with risk management. Customized performance indicators developed with the provinces to serve as a base for sector deliverables. 1,075 against the target of 914 beneficiaries participate in the department skills development program. These include 189 young professionals, 582 interns, 249 learners, 200 artisan trainees, and 55 management trainees. As our DDG for corporate services likes to put it, we are growing our own timber. Program one administration continued. We have completed a strategic framework on youth development in the built environment to address youth unemployment in the built environment. A disaster recovery site infrastructure has been developed, and applications have been updated to support the business of the department. We have recorded an improvement in the payment of suppliers within 30 days. In 2013-14, we were paying at a rate of 84%. This has in the current period under review increased to 89%. Of payments made within 30 days. With respect to program two, the purpose of the program is to provide and manage government's movable property portfolio in support of government's social, economic, functional, and political objectives. The sub-programs being strategic asset investment analysis, inner city regeneration, key account management, special intervention programs, projects, and professional services. The information fields of the immovable asset register in terms of progress populated during the current year, we have managed to update the records to the tune of 32,667 properties out of a target of 56,000. 871. When we talk about the information fields, we are talking about the information fields that are in line with the requirements of PREP. This may appear to be an underperformance in the current year, but it is actually in its totality an indication of us being on track. And the context is as follows. In the prior year, being 2013-14, when we embarked on the process, we had targeted 56,871, which the targets for 13-14 and 14-15 were really a target that was split in half. We were thinking if we could verify and update 80% of the properties in 13-14, we could then target to update the balance of the asset register post the verification exercise and all the other procedures in 14-15. Now, what happened in 13-14, we actually moved at a much quicker pace. So we ended up overshooting the target for 13-14 by actually achieving 99,140 assets which were verified and updated, you know, properties that were updated and on the asset register against the target of 56,871. So if you could follow my logic, now in the following year, we are exactly the same target as the previous year, but because we are ahead of schedule, it now looks as though we have achieved less than the target. But I think later on we'll give an indication of the total percentage or indication of how far we actually are when one puts the two together, because it's one register. With respect to projects, 180 projects out of a total of 554 were completed within the minimum prescribed variances allowed. 33 out of the 51 buildings were made accessible. all land plots of land were maintained across the country, and the special development framework was approved as part of the inner city regeneration to ensure integrated development planning across years of government. Program 2 continued. Of a target of 300 buildings for retrofitting, we managed to do 9,429 retrofitting installation towards energy efficiency. 11 buildings out of 19 were retrofitted with water savings installations. 91 buildings were retrofitted with the waste management systems, whereas our target was 82. 180 smart meters have been installed in various buildings as a means to contribute to energy efficiency initiatives. The client survey index was developed to gauge the level of client satisfaction with the services delivered by the department. 1,851 maintenance issues for prestige accommodation, electrical and plumbing were resolved within 5 days after logging a complaint. 2,629 maintenance issues for prestige accommodation, excluding electricity and plumbing, were resolved within 30 days after logging a complaint. The other issue is one that deals with debts owed to municipalities. We, in the period under review, managed to confirm that there was still an amount of 69 million that was due and payable to municipalities. And at the year end, 60 million had been paid, and the 9 million was raised as accruals to be paid. With respect to Program 3, which deals with the EPWP, the purpose is to provide work opportunities and income support to poor and unemployed people through labor-intensive delivery of public and community assets and services. The sub-programs being expanded public works program and the performance-based incentive allocation. As previously mentioned, 1.1 million work opportunities were created against a target of just under 1.1, which is 1045 million. 780,000 work opportunities were created in the rural municipalities against a target of 600,000. 100% of incentive allocations were dispersed to eligible public bodies across all sectors. 3,816 beneficiaries were trained to the National Skills Fund against a target of 800. Program 4, Property and Construction Industry Policy Regulation. The purpose is to promote the growth and transformation of the construction and property industries. The sub-programs being Construction Industry Development Program, Property Industry Development Program. The expropriation bill was completed and submitted to Parliament for consideration. Agreement South Africa Bill was completed and submitted to Parliament for consideration, and we have concluded the revised business case for IDP and is currently under consideration by all relevant stakeholders. With respect to Program 5, Auxiliary and Associated Services, the purpose is to provide for various services including compensation of losses on the government assisted housing scheme and assistance to organizations for the preservation of national memorials. To the end, our performance has been led to infrastructure where support has been provided for 23 prestige events against a target of 13. Chairperson, I would like to ask that I hand over to the CFO to deal with the matters of financial information, which takes us from here to the end of the presentation.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members, Minister and colleagues. I'll take us through the financial information for both the main vote as well as PMTE. Maybe just preamble it with a the color changes that we will be seeing when we go forward and impact
some of these changes that we've already implemented in the current year would have on the way we present the financials. We've had a change in the program budget structure of the main vote along the lines of to effect the transfer functions of the property management related activities of the department to the PRTE. That function has been completed during the year under review, 1450. So all the functions that are related to the property management as well as construction have been moved to the PMTE, stripped out of the main vote. However, I also want to raise the point that for purposes of future assessment of the department and PMTE, that the actual budget that relates to those activities of the property management entity will be or has been moved effective from the 1st of April 2015, and as such, the new effect of the program budget structures for the two reporting entities, we will see those changes coming through in the current year, having preambled this whole activity in the previous year that is what we're looking at currently. Just starting with the main vote, I think progress was given in terms of the nature of the water outcomes historically and where we are today. And we have just mapped out the progress starting from the year 2011-12 up until the year that we are considering currently. You realize that the year 2011-2012 was the year that actually marked the introduction of the turnaround program for the department, which program was introduced in the latter part of this year, being in January, in terms of the announcements that were made then. Because this was very late in the year, the outcome, the main vote, was then a disclaimer in terms of quarter of period, with a number of items that you can see listed on the chart on the left-hand side, red colored bar chart, indicating eight items of disclaimer. And then moving on to 12-13, we had a qualification, which is a significant shift, you know, from a disclaimer to a qualification. And if you look at the basis of the actual qualification itself, being on three items in the reduction of the basis of the disclaimer from 8 to 3. We then improved our fortunes from an audit outcome perspective in 13-14 with an unqualified audit outcome, with matters raised as matters of emphasis by the Auditor General around removal efforts, the restatement of corresponding figures from year on year, and material impairment of our accounts, of our balances, and an issue raised with the underspending on our infrastructure budget. We then moved to 13-14-15 with a similar outcome. However, the outcome as well, if you look at the emphasis of matter, there has been a slight improvement in terms of the issues that are actually raised as matters that are brought to the attention of the reader of the financial statement around those three areas that are listed on there. Then moving on to the actual statements for the main vote, starting with the appropriation statement, that will be on slide 29. We are indicating on there what are the appropriation that we had and what are the kind of shifts and variants we had to effect during the year to arrive at the final appropriation to deal with the issues of what you call balancing the budget to ensure that you do not in one area indicate an inordinate amount of an expenditure and on the other side an inordinate amount of over expenditure just to balance the budget. This is where the effects of the things that we've made, and we've done it per program, starting with administration program 1, program 2, on slide 29, continuing on slide 30 to program 3, which is EPWP, and program 4, as well as the last program, which is auxiliary and associated services. Just explain the kind of differences that the effect that we've changed in the budget because of the environment and the shifting of the fund. That is explained on slide 31, honourable member, in the sense that if you look at the actual table on slide 31, it indicates where did we take the money from and where did we move it to. As you can see, under Program 1 administration, goods and services was reduced by 13.3 million because of an under expenditure under goods and services in program one. And that 13.3 million was moved to goods and services in program two to then cover the over expenditure that would have resulted as a result of not having balanced the budget. And the main reason for this was around our current expenditure on our values, wherein the amount that was allocated was far less than what actually incurred. The amount allocated was about 94. We incurred an expenditure of 125, and the 13 was spent towards trying to cover that gap. In program two, we moved funds from program two from payments of capital assets, which is an amount of about 39.3 million, and moved it to program five, which is auxiliary and associated services under goods and services. And the reason why we did that was because of an under expenditure that we have in our report under program two, and then over expenditure would have reported under auxiliary and associated services to deal with the unavoidable expenditure relating to the one of issue of funeral we had during the year, as well as two burials that resulted during that year to the tune of about 38.2 million rands. The balance of the 1 million from the 39 went to payments for capital assets under program one, and that was to do with the underspending on machinery and equipment we utilized to offset high spending that could have resulted for this economic classification expenditure in program one. We then, under the EPWP, we moved 3.8 from composition of employees to goods and services in program two. And the under expenditure that would have resulted under composition of employees under EPWP is as a result of the vacant positions that were not filled earlier in the year, but were filled in a lot of parts of the financial year, which then meant if you look at the actual spending, the spending would not have happened for a great part of the year, and hence the under expenditure would have resulted. And these funds were utilized to offset increased expenditure for maintenance that we have. The 125 versus the 94 that I stated earlier on under the capital payments under which is services in program two. And similarly under program three, we also moved monies about 136,000 rands for payments for capital assets, machinery equipment, and moved it to a similar economic classification expenditure, but under program one to offset the under expenditure therein. And similarly, on the property and construction policy regulations program, we moved 2 million to boost the services and auxiliary and associate services, again to cover the unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure that resulted from the funeral and the two burials that I indicated earlier on. The same report is taken the final appropriation after all these adjustments. We've had a final appropriation for each and every one of the programs and profit against the actual expenditures that we incurred in that year now, and what the variances were, and the attempt of the slide that moved from slide 34 onwards is an attempt to try and explain the differences in terms of what was the final appropriation, which is what was the final budget, and compared to the actual expenditure, and we are trying to or attempting to explain the major variances and those explanatory notes in terms of each and every one of the programs comparing final appropriation to the actual expenditure that follows under slide 36 that follows. And as you can see, going back to slide 34, that was the administration of an under expenditure of 4.4 million equivalent to 5%, and under spending of 3.7 under composition of employees was due to those that became vacant towards the end of the financial year were not needed to purchase, as I indicated earlier on, and the transfers and subsidies for households under spend by 144,000 due to actual expenditure for lead gratuities being lower than what was projected. The mobile asset management program, there was an under spend of 21 million rents, which is equivalent to 2.5% of the final appropriation. And this under spend on payments for capital assets was for buildings and other fixed structures, which was due to payments made by PMTE, but got recovered timely from the main vote. The actual expenditure and commitment happened prior to year end. If it was their claim, because of the nature of accounting for the main vote being based on actual cash outlay, that expenditure was not recovered, even though the commitment was actually pledged. And under the EPWP, there was an underspending of 1 million rand, equivalent to 1% of the actual bundle of provision, and there are the compensation of employees, 17 million, which I explained earlier on in terms of the vacant positions which were filled in a lot of parts of this year under review. And goods and services, 3 million, due to commercial services, but which were done at the end of the year. However, the delivery happened after year end, and as such, the payment could not have been made. And because of the base of accounting cash, the recognition could not be ordered. While doing accrual based accounting, the expenditure would have been ordered. And the transfers and subsidies of millionaires, and the spending was due to concert grants who helped to truly Limpopo provincial government departments for EPWP, but who could not comply with the requirements of DORA, and hence the payments and transfers to those departments were withheld. And on the property and construction industry policy regulation, and a spending of 2.1 million. Which is equivalent to 8.7% of the actual appropriation and spending on the position of employees of about 1 million and goods and services of 12.7 million and overspending of 11 on transfers and subsidies. The compensation of employees, mid rent, and the spending due to vacant positions, which were closed later in the year, and goods and services of 12.7 million and spending relates to accruals, which is 5.2 for invoices that were received late and could not be processed due to changes in the banking detail. And the balance of 11 relates to budget allocation for Adrima SA, which was processed under the transfers and subsidies, resulting in overspending and irregular expenditure, which has been reported for payment to Adrima SA. The example, the explanation is that because Adrima SA is not yet the legal entity, the transfers that are doing to Adrima SA are recorded under goods and services, whereas the budget is sitting elsewhere under transfers, and hence one would show and over expenditure, and the other one show an under expenditure, but those, if you let it off, there's actually no effect at all. To deal with this matter, as you know, honorable members, the power to establish Adrima as an entity is before yourselves in Parliament and will be finalized, I believe, quite soon. And then the auxiliary and associated services, after all the environment and shifting of funds that you need to normalize and balance the budget, we have not experienced any variance in that program. Because we managed to deal with the issues as we went along. In terms of the actual expenditure, there is an appropriation, which is the same as I reported, but we then say, what's the final appropriation, or what's the actual expenditure against the final appropriation, not in terms of the progress to say, which is the past progress, but in terms of the economic classification, which economic classifications with your compensation of employees, your goods and services, your transfers and subsidies, and payments for capital assets. We now try on slide 38 to try and just explain the nature of the variances that result from there. But it is, we've taken the final appropriation for 1415 against plotted against the actual expenditure of 1415. We even further did a comparative analysis of what the actual final appropriation was in the previous year compared to the actual expenditure that we actually incurred in the previous year, so that we can see the consistency or inconsistencies in our spending patterns as we go along. Under compensation of employees under spending, if you look at the final appropriation against actual expenditure on an economic classification basis, there's an underspending in totality of about 90 million rand, which is due to all these vacant positions that are indicated, especially under EPWP, which were then followed in a lot of parts of the year, so that for duration of the financial year, those positions were not filled because of the process of identification and recruitment taking quite a lot of time. And under goods and services, we have an understanding of about 14 million rand, which relates to legacies of invoices, about 3 million of those that could not be processed before financial year end, and the balance of 11 relates to the budget allocation to Adrima SA, and that is in case. That the other part of it is under transfer and subsidies, where under transfer payments to provinces and municipalities, under spending of 1.2 million, which relates to those funds that are said to have helped to Limpopo departments due to non-compliance with the overall requirements. And then 11 million rents are related to overspending around Adrima SA. Again, like I said, the budget statement of goods and services, the actual transfer is done under transfers. And then the one was so overspending, the other one was so underspending. And then payments for capital assets, that's a 31 million rent that I indicated, which was a payment made by PMTE for the Salvador area for the bus services, but the claim only went through the Department of Public Works after year end, and because of the nature of the basis of accounting, the expenditure could not be recorded in the main book prior to year end as the months were flowing post year end. The actual financial statements of the DPs are new, that is their professional statement. The actual financial statements, which is the financial performance as well as the financial position, I'll get into those ones now. And slide 41, this gives us indication of the financial performance of the department, and what we've done is on a year-on-year comparison. 14-15 versus 13-14, and look at what's our revenue and the nature of the revenue that we collect, as well as the expenditure that we actually incur against that revenue to determine whether we have a surplus or a deficit situation in the department. And if you look at it, the variance year-on-year comparison is on your extreme right column. Getting into the actual explanations for these variations, the annual appropriation, the reduction was due to budget allocations that were reduced compared to the previous year, and there was just a treasury requirement in terms of trying to attract get some money for the fiscal or other priorities, so the budget was reduced in terms of the allocations to public works. Compensation of employees, the increase is largely due to annual inflationary increases, which average about 30%, as well as the grading of positions that ensued as a result of the outcome of the bargaining engagement of the employer-employee within the public sector. The goods and services, the year-on-year increase, as you look at it, is about 112 million, right? And therefore, we took to the reclassification of our infrastructure budget to accommodate for the current payments that we'll be making, which is the maintenance and repair for our capital goods and services, which are classified. In terms of the allocation from the national fiscal, under infrastructure budget, but if you look at it from an accounting perspective, most of those monies would be for repairs and maintenance and not capital. So we've done that realignment to indicate that goods and services were then increased by 112 because of that classification. Then on transfers and subsidies, there's an 80 million rand decrease due to budget reduction under EPWP conditional grants for both provinces and municipalities, also a directive of national credit. The petrol capital assets year-on-year reduction in buildings and other businesses of 195 million due to reduced allocation and increase in expenditure in the machinery and equipment in terms of that realignment that I spoke about. And as a result, it was a reclassification of the infrastructure budget during the adjustment for capital goods and services, from capital to goods and services. The intangible assets, the decrease of 50 million expenditure due to less IT software acquired. When compared to the previous year. Most of our IT enhancement initiatives are sitting in the PMTA. Just to remind the members, this is, we're looking at the DPW, the main account. In terms of financial position, which in normal terms we call the balance sheet of the department, which classifies the assets and the liabilities and the nature of all those assets and liabilities, we've again compared year on year what the balances were and tried to explain the major variances when you compare the amounts in this year compared to the prior year. Again, if you recall, the bulk of this would be characterized by the transfer of function that happened during this year that we effected from the main vote PMTE. Just a quick explanatory note on that, the nature of the assets that we have. As you know, unauthorized expenditure is classified as an asset because it should be recoverable unless it is voted for by Parliament as an expenditure back onto the baseline for the department. So the cash and cash equivalents, the free payments, the receivables and the liabilities, the funds that you must surrender to the revenue fund, bank overdraft and payables. The unauthorized expenditure, you can see there's an increase of about 5.5 million and that increase, if you run it up about 6 million, was due to the honoring of contractual obligations of projects that happened in prior years. The expenditure of which was declared unauthorized. And the bulk of this, I'll show the details of the unauthorized expenditure, which comes back many years, the bulk of which related to the spending on the school building to eradicate the mass schools that was happening in years prior. Then prepayments and advances, there's an improved spending on advance payments compared to the previous year, and less payment made for software by licenses compared to previous year. Under the receivables, the decrease in sub-debt from 4.6 million in 2013-14 to 1.3 at the end of the 14-15 financial year. And outstanding debt for construction services features increased from 7.7 million in 2013-14 to 14.6 million in 2014-15. then the buyer debt increased from 5.6 in 13-14 to 8.1 at the end of the 14-15 financial year, with this debt which we recorded to assist the hosting of the international conference or event on the architects. Then both funds we surrendered to the revenue fund, the reduction in the budget allocation and the balance on time at the end of the financial year resulted in the reduced funds to be surrendered to the national fiscal. The departmental revenue which we surrendered to the revenue fund, this relates to refunds of PMP as an outcome of reconciliations received in the month of March, which was surrendered later. No refunds were recorded in the current year. The bank overdraft surrendered funds, 250 million during the year, against the net surplus of 150 million. And a positive movement in working capital movements of the Namibia resulted in the increased bank overdraft by 61 million rand. And it was called the relationship between the bank overdraft and what we have called the unauthorized expenditure. Because the money that you have spent, but you can't recover, so it will increase the bank overdraft. The payables relate to 10 million received from the Eastern Cape Provincial Department of Public Works for construction of bridges and 8 million received from the Department of Higher Education for the National Skills Fund. 30 million rands of this was received in March 2013 from the Department of Education for the new training project. That completes the financial statements for the main vote, the details of which, as we have it in the financial in the report would be in there. I will then move on, Chair and Honourable Members, to the PMTE financial statements, which are contained in Chapter 5, Part B of the annual report. Again, I will reflect on the progress or journey on where we're coming from an audit outcome perspective. You can see the color code there. There's a lot of red, which then goes on to amber. We are still not at the green. The green in terms of color coding means you have an unqualified audit. However, as you can see the length of the bars themselves. 11, 12, there is an extensive list of issues that result in our disclaimer, up to 14 items. And then in 12-13, that list got reduced from 14 items to 8 items, although we still maintain the disclaimer. And I'll just advise our members that the result of that disclaimer was purely because of the main things that result in that, the regular expenditure and the fourth item that you can see, or three and four items, and five, were issues around the list. As you can see, that list has a fair amount of missing issues that we have. Because in terms of the listing, if you look at the role that we play as public works, we are in the center. On the one hand, we are the lessor to the time department. On the other hand, we are the lessee, because we actually get the leases from the private owners to lease on behalf of our time department. So we play that role, and as a result, when you look at our financial statement, the leases in the top. That issue would be highly pervasive, affect everything that we have in our financial. So dealing with the leases for us is a critical milestone and achievement. And there is one thing, if you look at the year 2014, we still maintain the qualification, and we move from a disclaimer, and the leases remained an issue. However, in 2014-15, we have managed to deal with this problem of the department, where we have a qualification, even though it's there, but like I said earlier on, as Mr. Sorote reported, only on two items, and those two items being accruals, as well as the issue around the property rates in Texas, which are not linked to our immovable assets register, so the payments that we are making. The financial position of the PMTE, as you can see, the total assets of PMTE, when you look at that honorable members, you're looking at 2015, a total figure of about 81.7 billion. And that compares to 77 billion in the prior year. And that is after the statement of our non-current assets, which are our property, plant, equipment, and investment property, because of the valuation or applying a fair value to our assets and administrative indicate to about 6% of our assets to the tune of about 78.1 billion rands that we have infected. The balance being the depreciation that we accounted for. We've restated the figures of 1340 to reflect a better better comparison when we compare year on year. The receivables from exchange transactions has been increased receivable from 10 departments, 40 million of 10 funds recoverable within the financial year. That's what it is, what we're looking for, what we are actually done. So the total billions to apply is about 14 billion rand. And at the end of the financial year, we had a figure of about 2 billion that are still outstanding from clients, which is the receivables from exchange transactions. Similarly, receivables from non-exchange transactions, these relate to the future benefits of employee benefits received from DPW as a result of the transfer of functions. That's where now the complexity of the accounting for transactions related to the transfer of functions now start to kick in, where the expenditures that's incurred on our behalf, on the behalf of PMT by the department, there's a particular way of treating that. You reflect that as the revenue from non-exchange transactions, and the money that are still going to be received, that was reflected there as a data from the main book. The operating lease assets, that's what the lease renewal, as well as the interest of the client, that's why that has increased our balance. And the cash and cash equivalents has just increased from 10,000 to 6.2 million rand. And it's because the rejected payment is classified back to bank and cash. That's what we did at the end to make sure that the account properly. I did talk about the property plant and equipment, investment property, as well as the heritage assets, because these were as a result of the valuation or applied the fair value to the portfolio that we have. And that gives us that 81.7 billion rand against 77.7 billion in the previous year. Looking at the liabilities on slide 49, what are the liabilities of the department? Current liabilities we have them there. We've listed the rest of the current liabilities that the department has. If you look at the operating lease liabilities again, so on one side we'll have assets which are receivables from the leases. On the other side, we'll have liabilities of the estate as a result of the leases. So the increase there is the impact of the new the review of the lease review that we've undertaken to clean up our lease database, as we did say. We've cleaned it up, it's substantiated by documentation, and when we do the proper accounting, that's how we came to the figures to clean up the numbers that we have and reflect the liabilities as we have there. Cash and cash equivalents, that indicates that our bank overdraft has moved from 433 million to 667, and I think we've covered this quite extensively to this committee in terms of the nature of our operating model, where we pay and we're going to recover from the client, and it takes time, and so that's been the result of that operating model. The payables from exchange transactions, that has increased significantly. And this is because of the nature of the accounting that you are doing as a result of the transfer functions, where we reflect all the work that you do on behalf of client departments for infrastructure projects as deferred revenue. Deferred revenue, by definition, is a liability that must reflect, and this has increased by 2.5 billion rand as a result of new projects in the current financial year. And it is just to align our revenues and expenditures appropriately. Retention liabilities are liabilities that are related to our actual projects that we retain without finalizing the account until the projects are complete after the snacks are done. And the increase of 8 million retention based on project status and type of project, new project increase, long-term retention. Employee benefits obligations, the transfer functions from the main goal to the DPW, linked to the receivables from non-exchange, which are resources in kind that you receive from the main board after the transfer. And the provisions have reduced. Legal claims of 28 million rands were reversed during the year due to cases withdrawn or no longer probable in terms of the success by the other parties. No longer probable that they will succeed. The final lease obligations, these are the transfer functions taking on to the contract books, the printer, the cell phones that the main board provides for us. We will account for these as finance leases in terms of the technical accounting treatment for those current leases. And the non-current liabilities, the retention liabilities, we will combine the two, the retention liabilities and the current liabilities. And the explanation is exactly the same, that long-term portion of the retention calculation as we have it in the above explanation that we have. The finance lease obligations, the same treatment again, in terms of the nature of the item that is printed to the cell phones under which we have finance leases. That gives us total liabilities of 8.1 in the current year versus 8.5 in the prior year, and then indicating threat to the department. From a actual balance sheet perspective, we said it was an accumulated surplus of about 73.6 million. Now the balance sheet of the Department of Public Works through the PMT is starting to shape up. It's sitting at about 73.6 billion rands. And when you do year-on-year comparison, it's at 22 after the statements of all the other, you know, valuations of the assets that we did in the current year. In terms of financial performance, which is sitting on page 448 of the annual report, we compare our revenues, that means that we actually collecting against the expenditures that we are paying. Total revenue is sitting about 10.4 billion rands. In the prior year, it was about 9.7 billion. And the revenue from exchange transactions, which is on our leases, on our projects that we are executing, that's about 7.6 billion. In the prior year, it was about 8.3 billion. The 400 million rand increase on private leases due to renewal, and 1 billion reduction in state owned as a result of projects that were not completed, and the actual money that they spend on them would be then accounted for under the deferred revenue, which in the previous slide I indicated as a liability in the financial statement. The revenue from non-exchange transactions of 2.7 billion in the current year compared to 1.4 billion, and those relates to the services in kind, which are payments or expenditures incurred on behalf of PFGE by the DPRW. From an accounting perspective, those are recognized as services in kind. And the total revenue is about 2 billion as a result of additional functions and employees, the increase in the currency because of additional functions that we transferred from the main board to the PLTE. We had two steps of transfers of transfers. The one happened during the 13-14 financial year, and the second one happened in the 14-15 financial year, which was the final, which now has paid down the operations of PMTE appropriately in terms of activities related to those functions that have been moved to the PMT. The operating expenses against the revenue, as I said, the revenue is about 10.4 billion. The operating expenses against the revenue is about 9.6 billion, which gives us a surplus of about 954 million rands for the PMT. And the expenses, I think, as you have there, the operating expenses, the note to the financial statement will indicate the different items that make up the operating expense of 8.8 billion. And when you compare to the previous year, that's about 10.6. And plus the transfer functions, increased expenditures, more staff related to expenditure, now in PMTE, as well as inflationary increase in leases and maintenance expenses that you've incurred. The interest expenditure, a small number, and the employee costs, which are the employees that are under the PMTE, we spend about 1.3 billion against the 629 that we had in the previous year because of the limited transfer functions that we did. The surplus is about 55%. We picked up, you know, interesting numbers that we know members like, which is unauthorized food and rich expenditure, and just gave an indication of that. And I'm sure members will tell us about to other questions. The only increase that we have for the unauthorized was 5.5 million in the current year. All of this has been explained before, the detail is there, and in actual fact, I can report that the standing committee on public accounts has actually made a recommendation that the department submits a submission to the National Treasury to process this for Parliament to vote. And then we will do away with the unauthorized expenditure as well as the overdraft that we have. So we have put it in wasteful. That's also been dealt with. It's also reduced, showing the improvements that the department is undergoing to reduce these misdemeanors, financial misdemeanors. That we've also given a breakdown of those. Similarly with the regular expenditure, which we reported in the prior year, as you can see in the current year, that we've reduced by 3.2 billion through the process of investigation and condonement process at the staff by National Treasury. Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. We'll take questions.
Thanks.
It's been a long presentation. May I suggest that we break for 10 minutes, let's rest and people to fully awake. I get very worried when a man looks at me with sexy eyes. I know we passed a law here, but it does not apply to me. So, The cheapest watch in the room says it's 3:30 to 24 minutes. Resume.
Thank you. No, that's my problem. If I take something, then you take it out, okay?
Thank you.
Can we come back to it?
So, are we presenting an
public work? Your slogan claims that the country works because of public work. Let's resume. It might be the cheapest watch in the room, but it takes time. Honorable members, you've read the presentation. Your opportunity for comments and questions. Platon's rage is on Drangwata and Azarum is on. Yel Akbar Greya. Okay.
Thanks for the opportunity. And I just want to make a comment. I really don't think such a big delegation was necessary. I really don't think so. But anyway, the idea, and as I know you, each of them has to respond in something. And Chairperson, I would like to comment on something on slide 15, the improved audit outcomes, and I want to congratulate the departments for the improved audit outcomes of both the department and of PMTE. But I want to also caution that as PMTE receives about 70-75% of the budget, it is their responsibility as the father figure to see that the audit outcomes of the PMTE must get better as soon as possible. Next question, the old argument of mine, that's target setting. And then the department comes and says they have outstretched the target and they've reached that and that. That is on slide 20, 21 and so on. I would like the department to be more realistic with their target setting. Really, more realistic with their target setting. Then on slide 20, they also said there are 33 out of 51 buildings were made accessible now. In slide 5, of one of the policy frameworks that they want to green buildings. And they've made 33 of 51 buildings more accessible. Now in the greening of the buildings, I see slide 21, 11 buildings retrofitted with water safety installation, but is 11 buildings a realistic? Is that target a realistic one? Vraag, voorzitter, om het ons nog zo sukkel met water en elektriciteit. Zo men verwacht dat ons departement, dus ons departement, onze samenverantwoordelijk voor hoe ik ga, dat die processen een bietje van haar aangedragen wordt. En die smart meters wat we bestel het is ingesit is, in die verskeie gebouwen, ik heb al een vraag gevraagd, hoe is het verkry? Is het Zuid-Afrikaanse uitvinding? Is het uitgevoerd, ingevoerd uit andere landen? En je persoon, Ons het geoffend met ons aanbieding gehad van die Auditor General. En dan hulle kreeg af die drie goed, ek wil nou nie hierby afsluiten, maar ek wil maar noem, dat hulle identische root causes en recommendations. Een van die root causes, slow response by management in addressing the root causes of poor audit outcomes. Wat sê die management daar, wat kan gesien is so'n groot spectrum van hulle nou hier is. En die twee punt wat ek aanraak is, dis die vacancy rate. Die vacancy rate. En ek dink hier is dat hier A3 hier is, het rimpel effect op elkaar. Hulle noem dit so key position vacant of key officials lacking appropriate competencies. Ek wonder, departement competencies space om te bepaal of die officials competent is om hulle taak te verrig. Hulle recommendation is GPW en PMCE should continue to permanently appoint appropriate individuals with relevant qualifications, skills, experience in vacant positions. Ongoing monitoring, ek hoor hier het SME eenhede hierso. Ongoing monitoring and training should take place. En dan die derde root cause. Lack of consequences for poor performance and transgressions. Dat noem hulle hier. Dan Chairperson, ek gaan afsluit met die volgende. Slide 36 en 37. Explanation of the notes to program variants. Nou, daar is gedurende underspending, underspending, underspending. Ek is bekommerd, Chairperson, as hierdie groot onderspandering is. Kan dit nie maak dat, dat Treasury een binnen begroting gaan gee aan die departementie. Omdat het duidelijk is, as daar onderspandering is, dan is daar of die capaciteit om die, die begroting te spanderen. En dan de laatste Chairperson is daar vanochtend, daar is gepraat oor, ek kan nou net die plekjes van precies, ja, ook op 36, kentie 36, word daar gepraat oor transfers en subsidies underspending due to payments without. Wat intussen gebeur, voorzitter, ten opzichte van jullie twee provinciale departementen? Daar rechtstreeks gemaakt, as ek het verstaan, as jy betaling terughou, omdat daar hulle nie voldoen het aan die weg aan die dora wet nie. Nou, wat het die departement gedoen? Om hierdie provinciale departement te help. Want jy sien my voorzitter, dit is die expense, EPWP program. En ons weet, wat is die mandaat van die EPWP program? So ek sal graag wil heel van my dit verdenk. Dan sê, dus kan ek daar nou nie nalaat om net negatief te wees. Ek wil op plaatsje 47 is daar die progress on the audit outcomes of the PMCE. Ek heb eens gesê dat 70% van die begroting wordt gehanteer aan PMCE. En een mens is verblijdend om te zien dat daar rechtig waar effort is om van disclaimer af te weer na qualified. Ek wil nou net weet van die CFO, het julle nou materials in plek, hoe ons nou gaan die 2014-2015 die accruals en die property rates, want hulle sê nou die cash to the immovable asset register. Hoe gaan ons dit register, so dat ons in 2015-2016 een groen
Now for a township translation from Afrikaans to English. Honorable Adams, among other points, mentioned that because of the scarcity of water in South Africa, and because of the electricity challenges that we have, it behoves the department to expedite the greening of buildings that fall under its remit. She further refers to the vacancy rate and makes mention of what was also highlighted in the presentation that the Portfolio Committee received earlier today from the Auditor General's office, namely that a number of people are occupied, or are employed rather, in positions where they do not have the requisite and adequate skills. She flagged that as a serious concern to be addressed. She further makes reference to slide 36 with regard to understanding, and she makes note that understanding, if it becomes a regular feature, invites a decrease in terms of budget to the department from treasury. So she notes that as a concern. Then she also makes mention of two departments that if the disbursements or something withdrawn by the Department of Public Works, and she says that while that measure was taken by the department, what reactive or remedial measures were taken by the department to assist those two departments in the provinces to fulfill their responsibilities. So she's basically saying that their two provinces that did not fulfill certain requirements, but what is the national department doing in order to assist those provinces to meet the requirements expected from them? And then one of the last points that she made was the linkage in regard to the immovable property register. She expressed some concerns related there. That's how far the township translation went. Beyond that, I'm sure there are others who are able to capture the essence.
Dankie meneer, jy is redelik goed met jou vertaling, maar ek ben nou jou nie dat klop nie, but I'll see in English too. Thank you from, you know, extra work. I've also got a few points, first of all, the restructuring. I've raised it to the previous meeting, but I'm still concerned about that. You know, taking the body, the heart of the department, which is really to provide, and I'm reading it from the mission, quality accommodation and related services to our clients, and to efficiently and effectively manage the immovable assets in our custodianship. There are other functions, but those two really constitute the heart of the body. And now we're taking the heart out and we're putting it next to the body. And we say the PNTE must now manage that. While this process of restructuring, the Auditor General put it out to us this morning, is not being complete and it's not been resourced, and this creates a significant risk to the delivery of these critical functions. So I'm still concerned about that, and I want to hear answers to that one. Mr. Chairman, the second one is on the leases. I know it's been also an ongoing problem for a long time, and the department has worked on it and made some improvements, but there are still irregular expenses with material errors, as the Auditor General also pointed out to us this morning, and they still find that they pay rent and taxes on properties that don't even belong to the department, or some on properties that are really don't really exist anymore because it's been thoroughly vandalized and they just the ruin, and they still sometimes pay rent and taxes on that. So that needs much more work to sort that one out. The third point is the asset register, which I suppose is related also to the leases. I understand the department has made significant work, progress on this, and I first understood that it's literally 90% or 90% plus complete, but it seems it's not quite so simple, because what they have done is they've got a list of all the properties, so they can say which properties they have and where they are. But that's not good enough. They have to value the properties and say this property is valued worth so much. And that's the second part of it, and that is not being done. So it still needs to comply with GRIP. And so this asset register is actually further from being complete than initially the impression was initially gained, and I'm concerned about that. And I'd like to hear when do those intend to finalize this. The fourth point is the vacancies, star vacancies. I see my colleague has also touched on that. There are most of the vacancies exist in the immovable asset manager section of it. And that is where much of the work needs to be done. 1,592 vacancies, most of which are in the asset manager register. And then, of course, also in the critical occupations, and we know what they are. They are the technical, the engineering and other technical related positions. And that remains a concern. It's not been like that years ago, and that is still a concern. So that needs to be addressed. Then I've got a question, that's my fifth point, on corruption and the consequences thereof. I've noted, for example, that resignations, there were 193 resignations in the last financial year. Now, I wonder how many of these resignations are due to pending the hearings. Are people allowed to leave, to just resign as soon as you make a case or you lay charges against them in the disciplinary hearing? We found that that's often happened in the past. People escape and then you leave it and then they just kind of pop up in a different department somewhere else or another province. So what is the reason for all these resignations? Are there any of them due to pending, that they were pending disciplinary hearings against them? Because it's also a concern that people who are found guilty don't face consequences or significant consequences. They are allowed to get off scot-free or with just a slap on the wrist, and they must face consequences. Otherwise, corruption, we will not get rid of corruption. And then lastly, mention is made of the SIU report, the Special Executive Unit report, that was concluded on August 2014, that's more than a year ago. Can we please see that report? That's from us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I'm fairly sure Barbara Stoch.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, we must commend the work that has been done by the department since there was that turnaround strategy. But as I say that, but now there is some concern the minister and the Chairperson about the understanding. If you check under administration, the understanding of 4.4, immovable asset management of 71 million, and expanded public works under understanding of 21 million, which is a crisis actually, because we cannot, because people are outside, they are looking for on this department that all what has been done by expanded public works should benefit the community of the country. And the other difference is that one of overdraft. We cannot just leave that one. Overdraft, we cannot expect that we have so huge amount for overdraft by the Department of Public Works. Because we have requested the public works long time ago to ensure that this overdraft has been done, actually. Deal with by the Department of Human Services, all for public work. So now, can they explain this and what went on with this overdraft? And the other chapter is this one of OCDE, transformation in CDE. Without transformation in CDE, it means they are not going nowhere. And then the other thing, what I wanted to get from the department, what step has been taken to begin the official of the CDE? Because if there is no action that has been taken for the officials, it means we are going nowhere. And the last of the president is the one of all members that have been touched on the vacancy and key official relating appropriation. What mechanism and system that the department have to actually deal with the issue of this vacancy, because it has that long time ago, it has about 1,000 and something, I don't know how many now. Thank you, Mr. President.
Siyabonga Mkhonisi. Mwelapele Meditep.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, EPW, the comprehensive annual report you gave to us. I've got a few concerns. Point here that they are like clarity. First is question of program 3, EPWP, which we are seeing under expenditure of 21 million. I'm concerned why I'm saying so, because we have a challenge in South Africa where there's a lot of unemployment, especially youth. And if this is under expenditure, really cost us. Secondly, is the human resource management system. It cannot be right for government to cost 19.1 million for weekend post, which you said you're still under recruitment process. I don't understand. There's something wrong with this weak human resource management. The third one is kind of green building policy, as of energy and water. South Africa is facing a huge challenge now because of load shedding, we don't have water. That's a commodity. But now there's a company from MNO which is assisting here. Whereas I don't know whether we don't have a company in South Africa that will help us to do that energy renewal. Page 19 said there's an improvement of a payment to suppliers during within 30 days. Whereas, we still have a complaint from the client, which are still complaining about late payments in our computer department. I don't know how to do that. Question of asset register. I mean, from 1994 to date, we don't have a complete register of assets. I don't know, I need to clarify on that. Lastly, I've been asking, I'm sure it's about the list of properties inside the country and abroad that belongs to public works. We need it as a better portfolio committee. But today is nothing. So when they promise that they'll bring it, they'll bring it. Today is nothing. So thank you.
Raj Mohammed. Thank you, honorable member. Before we have rejoined from the department, I just want to add to what the members have posed. I remember some years ago, as part of the department's turnaround strategy, His memory serves me well. Ernest and Young, who employed to work on the asset register. Now, obviously, Ernest and Young is a private company, and compiling the asset register, you are compiling it for a government. So immediately what comes to mind there as a concern, it would obviously depend on the nature of the contract that was engaged with Understandia in terms of issues of confidentiality, in terms of the information and the use of that information, so that that information cannot be used unfairly by the company that has the information and then pass it on to second or third parties. There must have been clauses that deal with that aspect. I'm not sure how long the contract was. Is it still ongoing? What is the nature of it? So I would like to have comfort in regard to how that contract was shaped in order to ensure that the integrity of the information cannot be used unfairly by a company that has it as opposed to other people who don't have it. Because of the nature, the work needed to be done, so you had to employ somebody to do it. But the house and the procedural issues are important there. The other issue that I just need to flag, in the report there's retirement. Again, if I recall correctly what I read earlier, this financial year, about 214 individuals retired. 124 people retired because of age. So the question that comes to mind is, what are we doing in terms of succession plan? Those individuals who come from various backgrounds with the skills that the department needs. So what are we doing to ensure that where those people live with the skills, the department is not left as at a disadvantage? Has there been, mentoring of people in the department and training others? So that's one of the issues. And then there's somewhere where there's the issue of contingent liabilities. There's an item there pertaining to labor relations, and there's an amount of 219,000. Yeah, I think that's correct in terms of labor relations matters. What are those issues? What are we doing to circumvent or decrease the labor relations issues within the department? Your opportunity for a rejoin the military or the department, whoever wishes to comment. Minister, what I refer to, obviously, in terms of the contingent liabilities was on page 100 and page 420.
Sure. Thanks, Jefferson. I will just take about two or three to see this one and leave all the others to the officials. Firstly, the first question from Honorable Adams, too big a delegacy. I think this is what confronts all departments. All departments are confronted by this. In fact, it's a consequence of a parliament kilometers away from an administrative capital. And you know the debate from 1994 about the location of the parliament. Because when we come here, we must not come here and say the people who are handling this, they are not here. We must be able to answer all the questions. That's why we bring all our DTGs. In fact, it's a consequence, it has been a concern, even from a number of committees. And you would remember that last year in his budget vote, or in the midterm statement, in the last term, the then Minister of Finance raised this debate about the administrative capital, if you're talking about cutting back on big, spending, when you're looking at dealing with this issue, that this is a debate which we'll have to take at some stage. So it's not just an easy matter. And I can tell you that there's a lot of pulling and throwing, even from the officials, even on other small issues they have to deal with from this side of Parliament. Whilst we're trying to cut, but sometimes it's unavoidable, because you can't even anticipate the nature of the questions. And people who are running programs must be here to answer and face the commission. When I started in this department, the committee members used to say, you must bring all those people to come and answer to us. Don't tell us about stories that they are not yet there, you're making this delegation, it's huge and so on. Bring all of them, those who are supposed to answer. And where to comply. But I still think that this is a consequence of a location of an administrative capital 2,000 or 1,500 kilometers away from the Parliament. But I'll leave it there. The audit outcome of the MP, of the PMD must improve. If you go into that slide, it shows how we're progressing from that disclaimer. From how many issues? From 14 issues, we're left with 2 issues now. I can also tell you that depending on what happens with the property rates, we might not get a clean audit, because it doesn't depend on us only. It depends on the billing system of municipalities. And municipalities, some of them, do not have the capacity to bill properly. And as long as they have not been able to bill us properly, we will never be clean. And who's supposed to give them capacity? It won't be public works. It's supposed to be co-opted. You would remember the program which the minister has come up with of going back to the basics in the municipalities. Once they've been able to deal with those basics, they'll be able to build us up. Sometimes we'll even pay, but you come and beat us and say, why did we pay when we're not properly built? These are the consequences which will happen. But we are feeling that we have set up a process to help even that process. We're part of a tough team. The task team was set up together, the treasury, public works, local government, the very hunger and so on, to deal with this issue. In fact, this is the most disputed issue. You know that even in some of the big municipalities, residents on their own, when it comes to billing, all the municipalities, they have a big problem. So even toward the department, it's a big problem. But we are trying to deal with that part. But all I'm trying to emphasize, proper billing will not depend on us. It depends on the municipalities. But what we cannot do is just to pay for the sake of paying, because we're wrong. But I think the CFO would be able to explain that. The greening program, I can tell you that the greening program is not even with us and the money. It is with the Department of Energy. That's the reality. It needs a lot of money. So the money which has now to kickstart that program, we can do a few things, little things we'll do, but a major program, that money is with the Department of Energy. And they are at the stage when they are putting a program together, they are inviting us also to participate and put that particular program. But with the thinking which we have, you're talking about the cement company. I think what is happening now, we are putting a proper policy together. Because there has been a quest to do things, to the small companies and some whatever to do the work, only to find that it's not proper work. You need a proper policy
And unfortunately, technology in this particular area is ever-changing. That's the reality, ever-changing. Next year, you'll have the latest technology, which is far ahead of the other technology you're talking about. So some of these companies which are advanced are just helping us to put, they're not running necessarily this program for us. Then once we have the proper policy for the whole government and for the whole country, and everybody has agreed to that policy, then we're going to be able to run on it. But it still depends on what is given to us for this particular program. And I can tell you currently, money is with the Department of Energy, not with us. I thought that I must pick up one issue of maybe our DDC Corporate Services will deal with this matter. The issue raised by Honorable Dreyer, the restructuring taking the heart out of the body. I think it's water under bridge. We've sat down, we've looked into a mode of running this thing. First of all, if you want to run a proper management trade entity and you run this portfolio, which we have said it's so massive as 10 times what you see with GrowthPoint, you need highly professional people in this area. And with the current arrangement in the public service, you cannot be able to attract those skills, okay? You'll just run it as we're running it now. But we have been forced to do what? We have been forced to put it aside so that we can be able to recruit the necessary skills for that, be able to put the necessary attractive and incentives for that, for us to be able then to attract those skills. Otherwise, through the normal departmental remuneration scale, you will not be able to do that. You can't attract any kind of accountant. You won't be able to attract actuaries. You can't be able to attract property economists, property people. You can't, in terms of the public service. You will have to run it outside, and you probably you'll have unfortunately to write it as business. But what was not done, we've not created a separate entity, but just ring-fence it. That's the term I was looking for. Ring-fence it nicely. No board. Accounting to the DG. So we're running it like a unit, like we have the different branches in the department. That's how we're running that particular division or that entity of the property. We've not taken it out. That's why it's accounting to the same PG, and then it's depending on same corporate services and so on. So it's more of a unit, but highly specialized unit. That's what I can say about that. And unfortunately, we've gone to cabinet, gave a proper business case and agreed, and we even came here. This is part of the problem. Why we've not been rushing up to fix it in the post. And if you look at the posts which are vacant, they are in the technical area. And one of the things you must accept, you're competing with the private sector. Some of the young chefs, you train them, once they are ready, they jump out, they go. Private sector takes them. Because they have very attractive salaries. We can't compete with the private sector. You see, those are some of the, we can try and offer some incentives. But when the private sector comes and dangles a better carrot to those young chefs, they just jump out. But what we have said, because we have to redo the structure of the department, and I think the Corporate Services DVG will talk about that. And we have to be very careful, because one of the issues, which I think you are also raising, and the Auditor General has raised, the employment of the wrong skills in certain areas. That's what you're fitted with. Unfortunately, they are permanent. Unfortunately. You know our legislation. It's not easy in our legislation to remove people, even on the issues of underperformance. You have to do a lot of things before you can remove. You have to do. The first thing you will ask, did you train them? If you now you're saying they are not performing. And the second thing,
how do you train a DDG or chief director as a director? And then it comes to the question, how will they employ? So the reality is that it's not as easy as that. It's up to simple things. And sometimes you can't expect a mass of people. Huh? You can't. It's an inherited problem. We have to talk about retraining those whom we can be able to train. We have to, sometimes we keep on shifting people to the different areas and so on. So it's not a question of a rush, because we must not think that they are easily available, especially the technical skills, even in the market. They are not easily available. It depends on what you offer. Perhaps the last one on the asset register, because I think it has been raised by Honorable Matebe, and also Honorable Dreyer raised this one. In fact, it's two issues. This one of the asset register. Remember when we talked about the asset register, we had, in terms of our timeline, a target date of 2016. We have the 31st of March as our deadline. But the crisis comes in what we are raising. And we've raised this matter to say, Honorable Dreyer, it's not complete, it's not about the number of relatives and what is, but also want to attach the values to them. We depend on the municipalities now to attach the values. Can be us. And currently, I was asking, what is this building which has a value of 1 rand? They say that's what you can attach. You attach a 1 rand value if you are not able to determine it until first time that you're able to do that. So that runs into billions. And the people who can help us is going to be those very municipalities, because that is their particular terrain. So we can complete this thing as long as we've not done that. We're still going to depend. So there's a lot which has to be done in cooperation with the provinces, with the municipalities, and so on. This issue of operative government is very important in terms of public works. So, but we still have a deadline up to 2016, the end of the financial year. The last one I need to raise, CBE and the issue of transformation. Well, there are issues where they are dealing with the staff members, Mabustoli. But transformation is as aggressive as it is in the country on the economic issues. And I think the heart of transformation in this area is to deal with the skills development. You know, CBE, Mabustoli, that's the last one, Chairperson. CBE is a council of the different professional councils. And those are voluntary professional councils. They come now under CBE. In fact, they have 18 board members, am I right? And 12 of them, they come from the professional councils. They form the majority. And then we appoint only 6. That's the heart of it. Most of them are still defending the old order. And if you know business very well, especially monopoly, they will always make sure that the new entrants make it. It's very difficult for the new entrants. You see, it's about business and competition to develop lots of engineers and architects. Those who are already established are not making it easy for the young ones to come in. As a result, you sit with a lot of black what-to-call graduates who cannot qualify as candidates. The companies, first of all, do not take them. Even if they take them, they drop them all the way. That's why we've made it a condition when we give some of the tenders. That if you give you a big tender, you must have had so many candidates as here certifying through your program so that they can be able to be a certified engineer. Otherwise, just leave it to them. The arrogance, and I must emphasize it, the arrogance and resistance to transformation, you won't believe it from some of the answers. Because it's very clear that they cannot be dictated to. You would remember that there was a legislation which was withdrawn. You were in Parliament before I came in, I think it was in 2009. There was a legislation was withdrawn. They were threatening to take it to the Constitutional Court, that particular legislation, which was going into the heart of the transformation of the various those councils. Because it's very clear that the issue of transformation is a big one. This is the debate we want to take now of the transformation of the built environment. And we hope that Parliament is going to help us when we come up with those proposals. We want to review the legislation. I can tell you one of the issues, as the last example, the issue of dealing with those who violate the rules. You know, what you can impose is a fine, even if they are involved in fraud, those construction companies. In the legislation, it's only 100,000. Only 100,000. You know why? It's because that thing was drafted by MN, not by the new dispensation. It was meant to have to be solved on these issues and so on. So we see that with those issues. So one of the issues we have to deal with is a fundamental transformation of the built environment, also the property environment. It's worse in the property environment. The black people are just in drips and drafts. In fact, the black property practitioners have confronted me as late as 2 weeks back to say there's no transformation whatsoever here. The space is closed for us. Big boys and girls. In some instances, you find that they control half of the town. The properties are theirs. But I thought I must not raise that as a politician from a political point of view. But the officials will talk about the administrative issue and act on those. Thank you, sir.
No, Minister, you don't raise it as a politician. As a minister, you speak from a policy position. As a different thing. You may proceed, sir. I let you have the last word. I don't have a problem with political politician.
Thanks, Mr. President. I think Minister actually responded to quite a lot of the issues that were raised. I will ask the compliments where I can and ask CFO to support me and all the specific questions that deal with the feedback on the SIU. I will ask the DG for governance risk and compliance to fill me in. There is a specific one or two technical questions that relates to the EPWP progress. I will ask DG Henderson to also compliment on that particular issue. The current status with respect to the movable assets, I think it is quite it has been quite a big project for us to get the asset register to a point where it currently is. As far as we are concerned, we're still very much targeting 31 March 2016 to get fully up to date compliant asset register. We are, as we are moving along, attaching a process of municipal values. To that extent, we have reached the point of about 60% of the assets that have been, movable assets that have been verified, where we have attached a combined municipal value in the region of about 78.1 billion. With respect to the actual verification process, we've gone through a couple of phases of this. So you'll recall that the first process would be to go into the deed records and try and pick up exactly what immovable assets belong to government. The second phase would then be to go and physically verify them. And you continuously, as that thing happens as well, you identify other properties as well, which you must then go and physically verify as well. I think we have made very good progress. Currently, we are in the process of capacitating the specific units with the process of firstly continuing with the gap analysis as we continue to do the reconciliations and identifying properties. That is being handled and done by ourselves internally, so we have built the capacity. As I said, we have attached the municipal values, and we have gotten to a point where we've got very good approximates of the extent of the immovable assets and the the values of them as well in terms of the municipal values. The question asked around the foreign properties. The foreign properties under the control of ERCO are really on the balance sheet, rather on the asset register of international relations. So those foreign properties will be on their asset register. I think in terms of the extent to which we have done our work, we could happily share the extent to which we have made progress in this area with the portfolio committee. There is also a specific question that has been asked around how we manage the sensitivities with respect to the processes using an external contract. And I think it's no different to the processes we use with other consultants that we use. I mean, one of the reasons that on the prestige property portfolio we don't move as quickly on the normal properties is because there is specific security protocols that we require as far as that is concerned. So we do as best we can bring that into the contracting arrangements and the processes to try and work with the consultant. I think the issue of vacancies has to an extent been covered. But in terms of this vacancy, you will also know that we are in the process of getting a new structure for both the public works and the trading entity approved. So currently there is an appointment, the appointment of a specialist skill that we require, whereby if we do not have those existing positions, we use appointment additional to establishment, and DDG Corporate Services would also just add in terms of how we are engaging on that process. But in our previous interaction with the committee, we were quite specific about the types of skills that we require to professionalize. If you recall, the service delivery model at the center has said there is an element of professionalization there, and there is a need for us to professionalize the discipline, particularly around property management. Now, for one to be able to drive that process quite aggressively, you need to be finding the experts that are able to help you. And one of the areas where we are seeking assistance is to say National Treasury under the GTEC unit, help us to source the skills to quickly get the job done. Secondly, to address any of the backlogs that are there, and thirdly, to help us attract the right skills for the work that needs to be done in terms of the various programs, for example, maintenance. DBSA also comes to the party in terms of the skill base that they have of technical experts in the built environment, which they have agreed to a memorandum of understanding as to how we are going to be accessing the skill space that they have. The other area that deals with the greening, I think specifically the German company that we are referring to, it's a funding institution called GIZ, which is funding the program of energy that Minister refers to earlier. So one of the things that is being driven as part of that program is to assist us with the pilot identification and building of, finalization of the frameworks and policies, but also helping us to develop plans around how to actually do and accelerate the greening program. Minister also mentioned that there is work that they are currently doing, which we do report on, but there is a plan that is quite specific and is responding to the issues of urgency that the honorable members are referring to. And I think that plan, again, if needs be, and if it's a requirement of the committee, I think there will be no harm in sharing that plan with the committee. In fact, even within the committee and getting feedback as far as the work that we are planning to do. There is an element of greening and energy efficient, energy and water efficiency that I think is often underpaid, and the extent to which you can achieve efficiencies both on the energy and water side through a change in behavior and awareness. And that is one of the immediate activities that we will be engaging on to communicate to not just the public works, sector, but also to the sub-government to try and start altering usage patterns and behaviors within our buildings. Just to add on the issue of the structuring of the trading entity, there is a complete, comprehensive business case that has been developed and was approved by Cabinet last year. But I wanted to also just the discussion around the state property management agency or a concept of a state property management agency. The work on this started somewhere in the mid-90s somewhere around 2006 there was a resolution to formally go ahead with the trading agency. And of course, for us to actually look at GIAMA in terms of how it has a requirement for the management of immovable assets throughout the entire asset life cycle, the disciplines and the professionalization elements of how you treat an asset, immovable asset, from the time you either acquire it or you know about it, throughout its life cycle, elements of investment decisions, elements of maintenance, and so forth, is very specific. And I think the business case is quite clear, and all the arguments that came leading up to the decision that was made around mid-2000, that you would need to work outside of the constraints that then would be there if we continued to have business processes of property management, as an example, within a departmental setting. So the process currently that we are engaging on enhancing the business process and to an extent redesigning some of the business process is actually starting to reveal some of those elements. I do take note of a comment made with respect to the target setting, and I do accept that in certain areas we still haven't perfected the precision with which we are able to set those targets. But again, some of the processes are relatively new to us as part of the process that I just explained, and I think we are already in our strategic planning sessions starting to deal with some of these elements going forward. If I could pause and ask CFO to deal with these issues, followed by the DDG governance, risk and compliance, DDG Corporate Services and the DDG for EPWP. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just try and touch on what remains that relates to my area. I think there was a question on the slow response by management as raised by the AG. You know, the kind of response I would give to that is, I think the coordination of put, given the nature of our operations, is quite a challenging one. I mean, we've got 11 regional offices plus the national office, so it's a dead race to pull all those together, consolidate, and provide a consolidated response to the AG takes a lot of time. And it's also a question of the nature of findings that we have. In terms of the protocol arrangement that we have for the AG, we've got 3 days within which to respond. But some of the things, and we have an arrangement, a gentleman's arrangement with the AG, that some of the... You've got a list of gentlemen's agreement.
It makes sense, but the auditors this morning were leaking, and you have a gentleman's agreement that included.
I mean, we could extend the period to which we respond. But given the nature of the queries that are raised, some of it requires extensive amount of work to pull together, and hence this issue of the slow responses. So one can ideally isolate some of those things that are related to those which relate to. But on ongoing improvement of order coordination, it is one thing that we put top of our agenda. In actual fact, what we plan on doing, or what we're going to do this year, is to ensure that each and one of the senior managers has a responsibility within their proposed agreement to deal and to deal with order findings and how they deal with them and how expeditiously they do it. So it's something that we are managing on an ongoing basis.
The next question on
the second, before you proceed, I would like us all to be mindful of time. We are moving towards 5 o'clock, so I would kindly request that our answers be succinct, focused to answering. This won't be our last engagement, and we won't exhaust all the questions and all the possible answers that we can proffer to. So it's ongoing engagement. We might not see all of you, but we'll target the questions. Thank you, sir. Please continue.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and be. I think on the issues of the outcomes, the funds that were raised, how do you deal with them? On the approvals, we are introducing system level, an ERP system level assist to be able to do the approvals very easy as part of our business engineering processes. On the profitability and taxes, gain for linkage and for projects don't belong to us. I think it's part of our total asset register compilation program. This would come up large. And I think there's also considerations with respect to the sector specific guide, which states that any asset that no one knows who it belongs to shall be disconfigured to a public trust and hence the payment that happens to that. And in certain instances, we pay contributions and taxes in very few cases of properties that belong to private individuals, and this has been as a result in most cases of the what you call commission to occupy, where we actually have structures of government on private property, and in cases we actually pay this, but this is what we are cleaning up as part of our effort compilation program. The kind of spending on 21 million rand that was raised, this actually, as I said, and it's a consequence of the accounting treatment that we apply on the main boat, where it's actually on a cash basis. The actual expenditure with respect to this amount was actually committed in the previous year. It was just a question of the flow of money not having happened in the previous year for us to actually record an under expenditure relating to that amount. And then on the bank overdraft, we have a detailed action plan for the bank overdraft, one of which is the change in our business model, whereby we do staff work on behalf of our client department, pay service providers, and then claim from them afterwards, which normally takes about a 90-day period for us to recover the money from them to our bank overdraft. Over and above that, I think we're working closely with National Treasury with respect to the bank overdraft relating to all claims that have been disputed by clients, as I've reported before to this committee, the issues around our debtors and the nature of the debt that we have based on the aging coming back from years back and us trying to resolve. On the late payment service provider, I think it's a challenge in the context of our business again because of the distribution of our operations all over the country. The work that they've done, that needs to be certified before payments can happen, taking time, but it's something that, again, we are striving to improve by introducing systems that I mentioned, our enterprise resource systems to assist us with our operations and activities in Sukuma County. Thank you.
Keep it brief, sir.
Thank you.
So they say, like a miniskirt, revealing but concealing the intentions.
Thank you. Chairperson, with respect to the report, the question about the report on the proclamation, R59 is an SIU report. The department implemented all the recommendations contained in the report or is in the process of implementing those recommendations. Moving on to another question of resignations, I can't confirm the reason behind all the resignations, but what I can confirm is that in the last few years, there have been resignations, I know at least four, where individuals resigned before or after having been found guilty to avoid sanction. What I can add is that on the 2nd of October, we've become alive to this particular practice. An individual was found guilty in a hearing for revealing the code of conduct, and there will be possible criminal charges as well for corruption. And the individual resigned an hour after the verdict. And what we did was, whilst you can't force somebody to stay who's resigned, we did insist that the person serves the notice period so that we can apply the necessary sanctions and consequences. Thank you, Chair.
To the
same
Afrikaans court and is there anybody else? Yes, sir.
Just to clarify the draft response, under the previous nation law, the very few number of resignations were linked to investigation. It was more people being investigated and they see that it's going to bite, get closer to them, then they resign. For those that resign while this very hearing in session, even though they may leave, we can't force to stay on if that's true. However, the termination is then recorded in the system and the termination on the grounds of misconduct, which then gets communicated across the public sector. So if you leave, you take a leave in another department, the record will show on the side that you actually left on the grounds of misconduct. So no matter what you do, you won't be able to get away. Irrespective of the fact that the case has not been communicated. In that regard. But I want to come to this other aspect in terms of the meeting process. We've dealt with this previously in the committee. And we've explained the fact that public work, existing organizational structure, is not sufficient to respond to the skills demands of public work. Because it was biased in favor of your support function. And therefore, you'll find that your key critical position does not have sufficient for their post. One of the examples I've made even in this association is the process branch that drives all our construction projects. It has insufficient number of positions. But because it does not have sufficient position, we then target that particular area in other critical areas by appointing, by making contract appointments. For instance, in that very same financial year, we appointed 15 retired technical professionals, engineers in various categories. Now these are contract appointments. They're not appointed to positions because the project branch does not have positions to appoint them against. And therefore it becomes appointment additional to the solution in order to drive critical progress. So that is how we do it. Instead, if I can just ramble quickly to the benefit of the meeting, you will find that they cut across asset registry where we get young people, young graduates, who are qualified in a BCom qualification and so on to drive the asset verification. It's a huge pool of young people. The same applies for the finance intervention, the clean audit program. We recruited young graduates who are qualified in finance and with BCom qualification. Now those young people were able to provide support to the office of the CFO in the drive for the clean audit. Now those appointments, it does not have those positions that they have in this project. But we have to make those targeted appointments in order to support him to drive his work. And hence, these appointments are not non-compliant appointments, as it seems to be the case, particularly in the side of AG and particularly in the side of the portfolio committee. These are credible legal appointments in accordance with public service provision. The Act provides for various means of sourcing of skills. It's through appointment by academics, it's through secondment, it's transfer, including appointment additional to the so it's a perfectly legal process that it's a way of responding to the critical skills challenge that we have in the department, the project department. That's the last point I need to respond to, you also share that what smack me for not agreeing, is with regards to the conditions that I have. Now those with regards to claim labor relations, for instance, with the case of an official who towards the meet as long ago as 2000. But the case that the department made, like, I mean the case that this official made the department, raised funds from 2000 up to 8. And he then makes a claim against the department. But it can't go wrong. It remains a contingent liability because it's the same that is done like, you know, until the matter is concluded in a court of law. So that's what it is. So some of those cases now, as we speak, have been concluded. Some of them have been seasoned, some of the cases lost, and we have to reiterate the official process. Thank you.
Yes, mine will be good afternoon, Chair. Mine will be a very brief comment, or brief comment, particularly to the 1 million rand under expenditure in terms of incentive ground to the Limpopo province is guided by the Regional Revenue Act, and but the 1 million rand eventually came after we had written to the HODs responsible, and they have not responded in a favorable way, therefore we had to withhold those funds. And that's the the explanation for the 1 million rand as expenditure, which is a very small amount, as it's spread over two departments.
Ya, imagínate, tío, que no le voy a ir a ver.